Well, that's like us doing for them.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to, what is going to be?
No, it isn't it like us doing for them. It's like us controlling them. That's why it can't be democratic. It has
but
to be under control.
For, what do you think is better for them? All right, is it a greater advantage to be able to use the tool of the union, an already set up organization with lots of power? Well, not lots of power, but you know what I mean. People power. Or to have the older people have a thing of their own, something that they control. Because, I mean, when you talk about workers being controlled by the growers, it's a very negative thing. And is it any more positive for old people to be controlled by the union?
Well, but there's a difference. Because with the situation of the old people as they are right now in most of the rural, I don't know about most of them, but certainly in an awful lot of them, there's no organization at all, you know. And nobody is offering to come out and organize them except in their own interest. Now, we are not trying to organize the old people just for our own interest. Sure, we're expecting a quid pro quo situation. We're expecting them to give in order to get and so forth, you know. They can't just sit there and become chronic dependents and all that. They got to get up on their hind legs and work like everybody else. But we have to control the situation up to a point, only up to a point. It isn't complete control. That's why I said semi-independent, but not complete independent. In other words, it's like it has to be more or less like the area-wide organizations that we're setting up all across the country, that like the organizers are doing right now out in all the cities. But they don't have their own constitution and bylaws. They don't, and the person who leads their meetings is not one of them. The organizer leads those meetings. And there's no voting about who's going to be the president, who's going to be the secretary, and who's going to be this, and who's going to be that, and who's going to be the other thing. For a very good reason, that it's either going to be a matter of our not going into it at all, or having partial control and letting them have partial control. For the reason that if we give them complete control, then they go ahead and set up their own policies, they set up their own treasury, they can do whatever they want to inside of the union, and they can start fighting the union. If they, for instance, well, you can imagine all kinds of horrible things that would happen, as has happened within the boycott operation up in San Francisco, and I went through the whole thing, where the boycott operation decided the hell with the union, we don't like their policies, and we're not going to carry them out. And they've done it in various parts of the country. And Caesar had to repudiate them and say, you don't exist anymore.
Well, in terms of the older people here, mm-hmm. how is...
Let me give you an example. Let me finish giving examples. So say that we go ahead. I just want to show you what can happen if there isn't this independent organization. Because I think we've got to face it, you know. The old people could get together, have the Constitution, bylaws, elect their own officers, and say, "Well, we want the union to back some kind of legislation. I don't know what it would be, but if I thought about it a little while, I could probably come up with some fantastic idea, kind of legislation that the old people might want the union to back, which would be in conflict with legislation that the union itself is trying to get passed. I don't know what it would be, but just to give you an example. Well, so they'd be at loggerheads. They'd be fighting each other instead of, you know,
working together.
Well, that's what has happened in these things outside when we had independent support groups out in the cities. It wasn't a matter of legislation, but it was that sort of thing. And, we can't create a Frankenstein. We can't create the Frankenstein monster and then have the monster turn around and try to destroy us. That's the reason for it. And it's a hard situation to operate within.
How do we explain it to people? In other words, when she asked me, well, what's in it for the farm workers? How do I explain it? I mean, I tried to do it philosophically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that that you can't, that all four people
no,
have
man
to
is
work
not.
Together. No,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is that quote from the
Bible? Yeah, it's something about the least of these.
Whatever
yeah,
you
yeah.
do,
right.
the least of my brethren, that
yes.
to me.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't, I'm not sure that a philosophical explanation is sufficient.
Sure, I think it's sure.
I know some people in Galatians aren't sufficient. And
Well, I mean, I don't mean sufficient,
it
but I think it certainly should be made. Maybe that isn't the total answer, but, and that's why I think we've got to go right ahead and bring in how we expect to get some help from M. Mangalo coming out with it right at that meeting.
Do you think that?
And then it's very clear, you know, that we expect we're going to help you and you're going to help us. And this is the way, this is the only way that poor people have ever been able to make any headway is, like you said, when they all work together. Because God knows they don't have hardly any money. But they do have tremendous numbers, and so when they begin working together, and you help them, well, this is the way organizations were. Well, this is the way Alinsky built all those organizations in the East, by getting the Protestants who needed some help on their problems to work together with the Catholics who needed some help on their problems, and the Italians over here who needed some help on their problems to work together with the Polacks over here and whatever, you know. It's the only way. And so, but I think we've got to meet the thing, you know, I won't say head on because I don't see much of a collision very often, but, you know, very out front, you know, that's why we're here.
Okay, if I was, you know, like, if I went before the older people and told them what we wanted to, like, do, and they say, well, what's in it, I mean, what is it that the farm workers want out of us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I say, well, we have certain services that we can, like, you know, help you with.
Well, you tell them that first before you...
Okay. There are certain services that we can help you so that you can organize your, you know, and obtain your needs, okay?
And then we go right ahead before they ever ask
right.
us any
and
questions
in
about...
Turn,
what, right.
And in turn, we want you... help our
mm-hmm.
cause.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Period.
We're going to help your cause, and we want you to help our cause.
Okay.
And then, before long, after we get that settled, we're going to go to the mothers with dependent kids and try to organize them, and we'll help them and get them to help us, and then we'll go to the, what's the next branch over here, and finally we'll get all the
domestic workers
and so forth. Until we really have, until we perhaps someday can have some kind of a marvelous amalgamation all throughout the country, of the poor people, which is what they did have during the Depression. They had unemployment councils stretching from one end of this country to another, and it was the union of the unemployed is what it really was. But, of course, you know, that even that, you see, that,
huh? Okay, with one objective during the Depression, the union of the unemployed. Okay, here we have the union of the farm worker,
uh-huh.
and we're also trying to, like, let's say, we want a union of the elderly people.
Right.
Okay, which are two separate, you know, objectives in mind. Uh-huh. Okay, this I think the clash between the two different objectives, I don't know how to, like, bring them together as one entity to, like, to take on, you know, the oppression of the government.
Well,
without having power over the other, you know, like the farmers having power.
Yeah,
to
what he's saying is that then you're asking, like, if you use the argument that all poor people have to work together and they have to form an alliance, then you get an alliance, not the PPU as an adjunct of the farm workers.
You not unless you come right out and tell them that. And that's why you got to come right out and tell them. You got to be right up front with them. You see, these unemployment councils that I told you about, well, they were all controlled by the Communist Party. Well, the communists didn't come out and say, well, I'm a communist, and so I want to organize you people in order to help the communists. They said, no, I want to help you organize so that you can help yourselves, you know. But they were doing all the organizing. Well, we're not doing that. We're saying, we're the union, and we want to organize you to help yourselves and to help us.
Yes, and yet we'll still have control of them.
right, up to a point.
Well, this is the problem. Mm-hmm. People, I said, well, you know.
No, I said, we want to organize you. I didn't say you're going to organize yourselves. See, they aren't. They aren't going to. If they were going to organize themselves, they'd have already done it, and they haven't. So we come along, we say, well, we're going to organize you. If you want to let us organize you, if you like the idea of letting us organize you, well, fine. These are the things that we can help you get.
Okay, and we're going to have the ultimate word as to like the policies that are going to like, be followed. Right? We're going to control.
Your policy is going
to. That's right. That's right. Right.
What if they want a more specific, see, like, if someone was to ask me, okay, we'll be under the union leadership and following the bylaws and stuff like this, uh-huh. But specifically, why do you think that we would try and do something that would go against you guys?
No, when you say we, who are you, huh?
You know, the old people in this organization. See, I think there's going to be... misunderstanding isn't the right word. It's going to be hard to explain, using the examples that we've given so far, why it should be under the bylaws of the union. You know, because it sounds pretty bad when you tell an old person, well, you know, what if, well, we had this situation out on the boycott committees and stuff like this, and. They don't think that they're the same as
the No, we don't have to use that. We don't have to use that. No. Well, if they don't, I would say that those that, you know, have been involved in the boycotts and so forth would understand. But it's true. If you haven't been involved in an operation like this and you haven't been burned, they're not going to understand it from that point of view. But I think that if you explain it to them by, this way, for instance, here's an example, just a very simple one. Say that say that we are beginning to, that the union is beginning to make a push on AB1. Same time that the union is beginning to make a push on AB1, they decide they want to introduce legislation. They've already, you know, they've gotten somebody up in Sacramento to introduce legislation on behalf of the old people. So what's going to happen?
Yeah. You mean, what if they want to put forward bills at the same time we're putting forward bills?
Right.
Are we going to help them, or are they going to help us, or each one going to go his own way?
In other words, I can't see any other way that it can work except in the way that it is, that we're at least trying to work. See, we don't have any proof yet that situation out in the boycott cities is going to work either. But we didn't stay away and say, well, we won't have anything to do with it because we don't know whether it's going to work. We never have. This union wouldn't have been built, as you know, if we said, well, if we sat around and talked and philosophized and so forth, and said, well, we're not sure whether it's going to work or not, so we won't do it until we're sure. Well, we just, you know, we went into pragmatism and said, if it works, okay, we'll do it. Well, but out there, the way we're operating, the line of operation is this. The organizer works with the organization. The organizer organizes the area-wide people's organization within the framework of the Constitution, bylaws of the union, and also within the policy of the regional area out there, the regional office of the boycott. For instance, if all of New York, all of San Francisco is a regional region, all of the Bay Area is a region. They have a policy. They have to have a policy because, you know, they work in unison. All the counties up in the Bay Area are doing the same thing at the same time in order to, you know, through a unified push, unified force, get something done instead of all of them going out in different directions and dissipating their energies. Well, so now they have this area-wide organization within segments of supposedly about 250,000 people in each area. The organizer works with that after he's helped them set it up. Now, every month that area-wide organization meets. They have a discussion period during their meeting. which, you know, they never had much discussion before, about strategy and about what they want to do within their area and all these different things. If the organizer takes a look at all the things that they're bringing up and he can't see any conflict with the overall policy of the area and of the region out there and with the constitutional bylaws of the union, fine and dandy. But if he has his doubts about it, or if he knows there's a conflict. If he knows there's a conflict, he explains what the conflict is right then, and that's the end of that. Can't be any conflict. If he has his doubts about it, then he says, look, we're having a meeting tomorrow morning, because they meet every morning. They have a staff meeting every morning. I'll take it up tomorrow morning, the staff meeting. We'll go over it. We'll call in the director and get his opinion on it, and I'll get the word right back to you. If we can move ahead on this without disrupting the rest of the operation, fine. Well, that's the sort of thing that we would have to do with the older people. They would have their own organization. The organizer would be working with them. And probably on a... Oh, and out there they meet with a planning committee of the overall structure once a week. Well, same thing could be true out here in the rural area. The organizer could meet with the planning committee of the older people's organization once a week, and bring whatever ideas come out of that meeting to the union. And I don't know what the situation is about daily meetings and so forth, but once they get on this organizing drive and they have any staff to have meetings with, they're going to have daily meetings, start out the day with daily meetings. Well, then one of the first things that would be brought up at the daily meetings would be the problems that the older people have posed, that, well, not necessarily problems, but subjects and issues and whatever. And they want to move ahead on this. Is there anything, you know, that's going to screw up the union if they move ahead on this right now? If there isn't, fine, go ahead. Then the organizer carries the word back to the planning committee people, and they get the word around the organization. That's about the best kind of a compromise that we could come up with.
Well, it sounds really good. But one thing that I see that might be an immediate conflict once we just get this thing rolling is the Social Security thing and AB 1. Okay, because if the government makes a push to cut Social Security down, mm-hmm. it'll be happening around the same time that AB 1 is coming up in the legislature
mm-hmm.
soon.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so the older people would be going to the union to get them to throw their full forces or as much of their forces as possible behind the Social Security program. Well, if the union, in the meantime, is throwing practically all of its forces behind AB 1, it would just be able to give a certain amount of its attention to the problems of the older people. On the other hand, if it's only, you know, going to be a token fight, as well as it was last year, you know, with that, what's the name of that other, what was the number of that other thing? Whatever it was only a token fight, you know. We didn't even know what the hell was going on down in the Los Angeles office, you know. And but in that case, the situation would be entirely different. We'd be able to get, the union, I'm sure, would be able to give a lot of attention to the problems of the Social Security thing.
And
the same way with the stamps. If they start moving on that, we got to move the union. We have to help the older people move on that too.
They are moving on the stamps.
The union?
No,
the union. We just filed a lawsuit against the United States Department of Agriculture.
That's great. Well,
and I'm an individual plaintiff.
How come the union didn't know about it? Mainly us.
Maybe we should talk about some of those things too. I mean, that's ammunition. That's stuff we need.
Yeah.
Right.
But also, one thing, probably this wouldn't come up at the House meeting, but one of the things that we're offering them is legislation. You know,
right.
The power to
exactly.
do it.
So exactly.
How would we explain it? You know, that, well, we'll give you whatever backing we can. At, you know. At the
yeah.
Time
just well, just that way. And then we would say, and we expect whatever backing you can give us on the union's legislative push.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you'll be able to give full backing, and sometimes it's just going to be, half backing.
Okay.
And when we organize the welfare of mothers, there'll be some bill which concerns them and the old people and the union, probably all the same way. So there'll be three different conflicts, but we'll... we'll all be working in all three of them, and it'll be better than
It was before. Okay.
Yeah, no, as far as I know, of no other union in history, well, I don't say in history, because I don't know that. Don't go that far back. But no other union today is taking on this kind of a responsibility. But with responsibility, you see, you've got to have some control, or else the whole thing is just going to, well, just going to go up in smoke. Because some people, you see, some people are going to try to get a hold of that old people's union right away.
Right.
I can just see, you know.
Most of the RU people are too young. But
yeah, right.
Try.
But the aged RU is coming there.
Could we, I don't know, we were talking about essentially maybe what doesn't seem new to you, but I think is a lot of new stuff that we're going to be trying to get across in the House. Maybe we could try another one.
Yeah, let's try another one. Now,
getting some of this stuff into it.
Right.
So that it's
as long as you get it down, you did a great job, but I have seen people try to do the same thing and get the people that they're talking to so goddamn confused they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. That's why I structured it. So, you know what? I had to do this in Los Angeles. We started out with a regular outline, you know, a long outline. Well, some of the people couldn't even begin to follow that outline. We cut it in half. They still couldn't follow it. And so we cut it in quarter. Then they could follow it. It had to be absolutely structured, had to be very short, or else there was no possibility of their following it in front of people because they got too jittery about it. So I think if you can do a freewheeling job like she did, that's the best way to do it. But if you have doubts about being able to do a freewheeling job, you got to follow a regular outline.
Well, I think we need the outline, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, but what I was trying to do was maybe change the emphasis, put an introduction on it instead of just jumping right into the history of the union and stuff, and put that as part of the structure of the outline. And maybe if we do a couple more practice things, we can get some of these other things into the structure.
Maybe
well,
we can get it down on
the
paper.
Ideas so that it,
right. Well, have you got it down on paper right now? What's going to be number one, and number two, and number three, and so forth?
No, I was practicing, but I can do it.
Well, I think it's very important to do it that way, because otherwise, while somebody else is trying to do it, why don't you try and set that down in that order?
Polly, it's your turn. You were going to be my number two anyway.
No, but I don't know how to do it. Number two.
Practice.
Well, but she did. She jumped into number two too.
Yeah. Well, number two needs a lot easier than number one.
Is there any coffee in this house meeting?
We don't have coffee in our house meeting. It's too intoxicating.
Hey, where'd you find the, these? Yeah.
Well, long story. Crest was in Bakersfield. I went to the purchasing department, his office. So then I asked Tom Fiatter, and he said no, but Esther did. So I finally got into Esther's office, and she had given them to Steve Burton. So I went to Lynn's office, and, you know, everybody's on the phone, you're waiting for them to get off the phone so you can ask them.
A conflict, as far as program is concerned, is probably be mainly a matter of timing, you know. As long as both sides understood, both groups understood that, well, sometimes we'll be able to throw everything into it, and sometimes we won't.
Usually where conflict would seem to arise is not so much on immediate progress, but on outside issues, say with support groups. Like we don't have any conflict with boycott support groups on what stores to picket or anything like
that. Oh, yes, we do.
We do?
Oh, yeah.
They like to do the big stores.
Sure
they
do.
Don't like to do the little stores.
Right.
Because of the monopoly and stuff.
I was thinking more in terms of the conflict as being like an outside issue that's, well.
That too.
the Israeli thing, the illegals.
Right. Well, that's another issue.
Those kinds of things.
No, you get the others too. And you can see what would happen if it were completely independent. That, you know, they'd just grab the ball and run. They'd say, "The hell with them. We don't. We're more concerned about the illegal situation, and we know more about the illegal situation than the union does. And by God, we're going to, you know, that's where we're going to put our efforts." And
when you talk about control, you're not really talking about like a dictatorship type thing. You're talking just about coordinating.
Yeah, but it has to be clearly in order to guarantee that situation will exist as nearly as we can get it to exist. We have to limit the power of that organization, because if we give them full power, there isn't going to be any assurance that there's going to be coordination. That's why it has to be limited.
It's more than just veto power, too. You're talking about, we're not just talking about vetoing, let's say, things that Congress. We're also talking about constructive power in the sense of opposing things.
All right. That's right.
Of leadership.
That's right. I think that for the most part, it can work quite well. But there will be problems. No question. There has to be problems. It has to be ironed out. But if we just, you know, say, well, it's too difficult. Too many flies in that ointment. You know, we better stay away. Well, until we get them ironed out, until we get them out of the ointment, we'll never move.
Could I ask a dumb question?
Yeah, please do.
It's how come it was decided to start with old people?
I don't know. I don't know.
Isn't it because of the most in need?
Well, certainly in many ways, I guess you could say that.
What's that?
Because that's the group that is most in need.
Because the younger groups, I think, can kind of fight for themselves a little bit anyway. Whereas the older people, because they're old, because they don't drive, and because of many reasons, they can't get out and do this.
I think when you say something like that, in terms of what old people can do, you're taking a lot, you're assuming a lot. Because my experience with older people has been that people tend to think that they can't do anything, that they can do a whole lot. And you're going to find a lot of old people who don't have transportation and stuff like that. But unless the person wants to be kind of a vegetable, they try and do some things. You know, like, our picket lines are made up mostly of old people. Especially before, like, everybody gets off work, all the old people come out to picket. And like the Teamsters say, our picket lines are made up of disabled people, old people, and welfare workers. And it's true. So our boy got picket lines, because those are the people who have time on their hands.
You know, that's the way it is in Phoenix, too. Our picket lines are made up of farm workers who work in Indian Harvest. Our boycott picket lines are made up of welfare mothers and old people.
Well, we have like the Pirelli Minetti people and working people. They come when they get off work, but for the earlier part of the day, it is the other people who are out there helping and who we can get to do stuff for.
Of course, when you really do some organizing out there, and the way you're going to be doing it on the weekends, you can get a lot of people. Besides that, you can get a lot of men out on the line too.
Oh yeah, we have like the Pirelli men and all those guys come out.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to thank many for having me over here today. We speak to you people, and I want to thank everybody for coming to hear what it is I'm going to say. My name is Polly Parks, and I work with the National Farm Workers Service Center. What's your name?
My name is Andrew Brenner. I'm from the Lacey. Captain Chipsoy, from Seattle.
Julia?
Julia.
Okay, I want to pass around a sheet and get your name and address and phone number, because I'm going to be getting back in touch with you, so I'm going to get those.
What are we signing up for?
just so that I'll know who's here at the meeting, and so that if I want to get in touch with you after I've explained what the situation is, I'll have your phone number and address.
Okay. You already have mine.
First of all, why I asked Minnie to get you over here today, and what I wanted to talk about basically, is that United Farm Workers is thinking of forming a new organization. This would be a semi-independent organization composed of the older people in our communities. Now, I'm going to give you a whole history of why we want to do this and the reasons behind it, and I want to get your ideas on why we want to do this also. The main reason is we feel that older people are the people who need the most help in the communities now. 10 years ago, why? Well, 10 years ago, especially down here in the valley, the people who were the most forgotten people were the farm workers themselves. And during that time, they've had two huge strikes here in the San Joaquin Valley, here in Delano. They've gotten legislation passed, and farm workers now, if you go to the city, people know who picked their food. They know who the farm workers are, they know who Cesar Chavez is, they know who all these people are, Dolores Huerta, Gilbert Cusi, all these people, they know about the United Farm Workers, and they know that there's problems in the fields, and they know that the farm workers have gotten together and they're going to try and do something to change their conditions. So we're looking back at our home ground, our situation here, and we see that there's other groups of people who are forgotten now. And the largest group and the one we feel is the most important are the older people in our community. Now, what we're proposing to do is form an organization to...
Pardon me, who is we again?
We is the... Well, it's the Farm Workers Union. More specifically, it's going to be through the Service Center, which is what I work with, mm-hmm. Okay? And as well, like Minnie knows what we do because she's come in for our help before. We help people with Social Security, immigration, workman's comp, all those type of things. Make sure they get, you know, what they're supposed to be getting from those bureaucracies. But what we want to do with older people is form an organization to help fight for legislation and to help fight for rights for older people. Okay. Now, we don't want to do it all for the older people themselves. We want the older people to be involved in it and to be the ones who are helping us to fight for the legislation. To put this into some sort of perspective, I ought to talk a little bit about why the union would even be interested in helping older people, okay? Because, you know, you look at us now and you say, well, you've got the farm workers and you've got contracts coming up, you know, or, you've got this big fight going on with the Teamsters anyway right now. So what are you coming around to us older people for, except the older farm workers? And I think to see that, we need to look back at the history of the United Farm Workers Union and where the people who started the United Farm Workers Union were coming from. And where they were coming from was an organization called CSO, Community Services Organization. And that was here in California. It was in the urban areas, in the barrios, and in the valleys. And what they did was they helped people with things like immigration, voter registration, citizenship, welfare, you know, whatever problems you had. But they also, through registering people to vote and getting political power, were able to get some very important legislative changes here in California. One of the first things they did was, there used to be a state pension fund. We don't have it anymore. But it was only for citizens.
And we could get it back.
Sure, hope so.
I don't think so. Jerry Brown's here. But they were able to get the state pension to cover people who were not citizens of the United States, which most of the older Spanish-speaking people were not citizens of the United States. They were also able to get legislation pushed through to make sure that state disability covered farm workers when they got sick or injured off the job. And they besides that, they registered over 500,000 people in California. Now, that's a lot of people, and that represents a lot of votes. But the only way they were able to get those programs pushed through is by having that many people registered and applying that type of political pressure. They did it with other things too, you know, like pickets and stuff like that. But the main thing was being able to go to a legislator and say, well, I've got 550,000 people behind me, so you better listen to what I say. Right now, the older people in America don't have that type of political pressure behind them. A lot of people are registered to vote, but they don't vote in unison. They vote just, well, this candidate looks like he's okay, and this bond looks like it's okay, and they just vote, you know, piecemeal all over the place. So, anyway, CSO was, it worked in the communities, like I was saying, in California. But there were two people in that organization who started to move out of it because they were working a lot with farm workers, and that was Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta. And they saw that CSO was becoming more and more concerned with middle class problems and not really wanting to deal with the biggest problem there was right then, which was the farm workers. So they got out of the CSO and formed their own organization, National Farm Workers Association. And Cesar came back to Delano, where he'd been a long, long time ago, and got married to his wife, and started working in the fields and started to form this association. And what they did was, well, first of all, they formed things like a credit union so that farm workers could get low-interest loans and were able to save money without having to worry about the high interest rates that the banks charge. And they were able to start a debt benefit plan, which was everybody paid $3.50 a month. And that
who was this you're talking about?
This is the National Farm Workers Association.
Okay.
The debt benefit plan covered, if you died, you got $1,000. They also started the service centers up. But this time, the service centers were for farm workers and concerned primarily with farm workers' problems. Now, at first, they thought that they would just be doing organizing for a long, long time and trying to build up that old type of political power. Well, not old type, but the same type of political power that the CSO had. But what happened was circumstances changed, and they ended up going out on strike in 1965. And they went out on strike, and because of injunctions and illegals being brought in, what they did was they called off the picket lines in the fields pretty much and went to the cities on the boycott. And by gaining the support of people in the cities on the boycott, they were able to get back all the grade contracts in 1970. They then farm workers. Okay, now the reason that Cesar went into organizing farm workers, besides they were the most forgotten people around at that time, was because of the conditions that farm workers were working and living under, which were the worst living and working conditions in America. A good example is one of the people that we have a boycott against now, which is Gallo Wineries up in Modesto. Now, Gallo used to have a system set up where they would push people when they were pruning or something like that. They would set you a quota, okay? And if you finished that quota, you got to go sit in the bus. But everybody else had to keep on working for free until they finished their quota. It was set like on a time thing like that. Okay, you had a certain quota to finish by 5 o'clock, and if you didn't finish by 5 o'clock, then you had to work for free until you did finish your quota.
Was that legal?
Well, whether it was legal or not, Gallo was able to do it because Gallo was the richest person in that county. Gallo owns the courts, owned the schools, owned the whole governmental machinery. And the people there weren't organized enough and able to break his hold on them. He was using, before we got a contract in Gallo in 1967, he was using convict labor to pick his grapes, which is about the cheapest kind of labor you can get.
My gosh.
Now, with those type of conditions...
People don't know that, do they?
No, they don't. There's a, well, like the housing conditions, all the conditions that the workers were working under were really bad. Like, I know that when I first came to to California, which was in 68, I used to go driving down 99, and I'd see these old shacks, you know, at the side of the road, and I didn't think anybody lived in them. I thought they were just old shacks dying by the edge of the road, but they aren't. Those are the places where farm workers are living, and now where a lot of older people are living also.
Did you help them fix that housing?
The farm workers, you mean?
I mean, did you help the matters any? I mean, were they able to
Able to get the housing?
Better housing or something?
Well, once we got contracts, we were able to get better housing and better working conditions. First of all, under the working conditions, like I was talking about Gallo and, you know, pushing people and stuff like that. Once we got contracts, workers had seniority. They couldn't be fired at will. If you had worked a certain number of hours in a ranch, the grower just couldn't come up to you and say, okay, get the hell out of here. Also, the workers went through a hiring hall, so they didn't have to deal with one of the worst people in the whole world, which is the labor contractor, who totally controls the workers' lives. They were also getting better wages. They had pesticide controls. They had health and safety controls. Like before, you were lucky if you found a bathroom out in the field, even though there's laws on the books that says they're supposed to keep bathrooms out in the field. Farm workers weren't unified enough to make sure that those laws were enforced until they got a union. And as far as the housing and stuff was concerned, once people started earning more money, they were able, instead of just following a migrant trail all the time, they were able to settle down in one town and, you know, maybe start renting housing or through some of the government programs like self-help housing, you know, build their own home and start living a somewhat normal life. Send their kids to school instead of having their kids go out and work in the fields all day long. So anyway, in 1973, we lost all those contracts because the growers couldn't stand the workers having that type of control of their own lives. They also didn't like the idea of black and brown, and Filipino, Mexican, Anglo workers who they had treated as practically slaves. They didn't like them having, you know, being able to say no to them. So what they did was they went to the Teamsters Union and signed what's called the Sweetheart Contract. Sweetheart Contract, what it is a contract between the employer, the grower, and the leadership of the union. And you don't ask the workers if they went to contract or not. So after that happened, the farm workers went out on a strike. There were over around 10,000 farm workers in California who went out on strike in 1972. And it ended up with a lot of farm workers getting hurt, beaten up, and two farm workers got killed. After the two farm workers got killed, we called off the picket lines because we couldn't afford to have our people out there getting killed off like flies. And what we did was we went back to the boycott again, sent our people back out to the cities to win back the grape contracts, the lettuce contracts, and the Gallo contract through the use of the boycott.
Is that still going on?
It's still going on. In fact, right now we're winning that boycott.
What are you boycotting?
We're boycotting grapes, head lettuce, and Gallo wine. And we're winning that boycott right now. The grape sales are down all across the nation. And they're down because people got together and moved, you know, they go to stores, they picketed stores, and we file lawsuits against the growers and file lawsuits against the Teamsters and everything. And we're going to be getting those contracts back pretty soon.
So you don't have to worry about the farm workers anymore?
Well, we don't have to stop worrying about them, but they're going to be having a little bit more control over their lives again. So we want to go to another group of people who we feel need to have help right now in getting some control over their lives. Because, see, the farm workers didn't get control of their lives all by themselves. They had to have people come to help them, you know, get together and unify. And that was done through people like Caesar and through people like the migrant ministry and all the people who came in and helped the farm workers organize.
And those very people who want to do this new thing?
Yes, they are. And it's through, we want to do it through our service centers. Do you have any questions, ma'am, about why you're doing this?
I had a question I was going to ask you. Is this how you got the service centers?
What, through the union?
Yeah, through the union.
Yeah. We've had service centers pretty much all through the history of the union. It was a basic idea when they first started, because Caesar had seen how it could work through the CSO. And we have the service centers now spread out all over the state of California. We have service centers in Arizona and down in Florida where we have another contract. And the idea of the service centers is to help people with things like immigration, Social Security, workers' compensation, all those types of things. But also, in return for those services, get people to help us at the same time. Not really to help us, but to help themselves. Otherwise, we're just like another government agency.
Are these service centers going to help us?
Yes, they are. That's what I'm coming up to now. Do you have any more questions on what I said before about why the union wants to be doing this?
It all sounds very interesting.
What do you mean?
But I don't know what it's going to have to do with
how interesting do you want it to sound?
I mean, it sounds
just because you're not interested in it doesn't mean that.
No, she said she
it
is.
It sounds very interesting.
Oh, it does sound very interesting.
That's why I say, you know, if it's going, it
but
sounds like
you want to know what it's going to be able to do for old people. Okay, tell me what your problem is. Just briefly. What your problems are.
Housing. The rents are so high and you find a place that's run down, and then usually your Social Security check just doesn't cover everything. I mean, some months you pay this and you do without that. And the transportation is, you have to walk about a mile before you get to the closest bus, and you have to take a cab if you want to go someplace right away.
Okay, so you would say your problems are like housing, Social Security, transportation, basic things like that. Okay, the way a service center can help you with things like that is by, okay, with your Social Security, we can find out why your check is coming late, and if it's their fault, we can make a change. Okay? With your housing, if the landlord isn't doing something that he's supposed to do by law, we can either through just pressure from ourselves, you know, by telling him what the law is, or by taking a suit into court, we can get him to change those conditions.
Does that take a long time?
Well, see, the easier thing to do is to just use pressure on it, okay? If you go and tell the landlord that, okay, according to such and such section, you have to do this and this and this, and if you don't do that, we're going to bring over all Minnie's friends to pick up from your house, and he's probably going to do it, okay? Or if you're just strong, see, if you're afraid of your landlord or afraid of anybody, you're not going to be able to move. If you're just one person, nobody's going to listen to you. But if you have more than one person.
See, Minnie has all these sons. And if they were here, this wouldn't be happening for them. But they're all married and gone, and they're in the eastern part of the country, and they don't know. Yeah. They have their families and their jobs back east, and so he's here by himself.
The
children just can't come over here because she needs them every now and then. They come for Christmas, you know. Believe me, I know the boys, and this wouldn't happen to her if the boys were here.
Okay, but her boys aren't here. And many and all the other older people, poor older people in this community, have some very problems that are all in common with them. They have problems with their Social Security, they have problems with housing, they have problems with food. The Social Security, if you've seen in the paper lately, Social Security is probably going to get cut.
What do you mean?
The President Ford wants to cut Social Security.
Oh, terrible. What are we going to do?
Well, one of the things we're going to do is stop them from doing it.
Is it going to cut our men too?
How can we do that?
How can we cut our Social Security? I was like, he cuts our rent. If he doesn't cut our rent, we can't afford to live a normal living.
Well, see, what we're suggesting, okay, we've got things coming up like President Ford is going to be trying to cut the Social Security. They're going to try and raise the price of food stamps to 1/3 of your income.
That's impeaching.
We have some of the
like that. We have a better idea than Ford.
We have a campaign like that already. Impeach Ford.
Okay, but we have problems within our community, okay? And what the service center can offer to you is ways to solve that problem. And we can give you assistance in whatever way that you need concerning Social Security, welfare, immigration, if you want to immigrate over your children or are having problems yourself with immigration. Any type of problems that you have, housing, transportation.
Okay, but how much does it cost?
It doesn't cost anything. All it, well, let's put it this way. It doesn't
this is
cost
free?
You money.
Everything you said
it
was free?
It doesn't cost you money. What it costs is a commitment from you to help make sure that it works. Okay? Because, see, I'm just one person. Okay? Now, I can go out and help as many people as I want to. As many people as I can possibly stuff into one day. But that is not going to help us get changes in laws. And I mean, I can go down to the welfare department with everybody in the whole world and help them fill out their papers and stuff like that. But unless I have an organization to back me up, I can't get the welfare department to pay any attention to me. Okay? I need the... see, once you start getting people together, especially older people, we're going to be able to get some real changes done in the laws that are affecting us. Okay? We can get some changes in Social Security. Like, take the SSI program, okay? Now, look at what almost happened in 1973 when they started the SSI program. Here in California, Reagan wanted to cut down the amount of money that the person could get to, well, SSI was going to make sure that everybody in the United States got at least $140 a month. They were 65 or older, disabled, or blind. And Governor Reagan, even though here in California, a person who was 65 or older, disabled, or blind could get $225, he wanted to cut it down to $140. But through legislation, they were able to get that changed and increased.
Did the old folks help change that?
The old folks did help change that, but a lot of that was done through groups who work on with disabled people and with blind people, or just regular welfare rights people, not specifically old people. Now that's a program that concerns more than just old people.
So how are you going to get all the old people together?
Well, what we want, the way we want to is through having meetings like this one right here. Okay, I want you to get three or four people together and bring them over to your house as soon as possible. So I can come over and explain to them the program that we're trying to put forth. Okay, we want their ideas on what their problems are and how they think that we can change them and whether they think forming an organization like this would make any sense to them. And if they want to, if they think that this is a good idea.
Do you want our ideas too?
We want your ideas too.
When?
Now. But I would like to get a commitment from you to have a house meeting, and a commitment from you to have a house meeting, and even another commitment from you to have another house meeting.
And you'll be there.
I'll be there, and I'll bring the same information I got this time. And we can see, once this thing starts growing, we'll be able to get, you know, more and more and more. So that all over here in Tulare and Kern County, we have all the old people getting together and discussing what their problems are and whether there is a need to have an organization like this.
Like a chain letter.
Right. Except, if people want it, then within a couple of months, we'll have a you know, statewide meeting. Because this isn't just happening here in, you know, in the Delano area. It's also happening in all of our other service centers, which I told you about, all the ones all over California. Up in U.S. City and Marysville, Selma, Salinas, they're having meetings with the older people in the community. And they're talking to them and finding out what their problems are and how we can solve them.
So you want our opinion? Your ideas.
Right. I also want to commit
what I'm thinking about.
So can you hold another gospel?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I'd love to.
What day is today?
Friday?
Right. Okay, what time?
How about 10 in the morning?
10? Okay, that's fine. And just, you know, 3, 4, 5 people over. We'll just sit down and discuss. And I'll be calling you before Friday to remind you of that. What about you?
Well, how about sometime next week?
Okay, when?
Wednesday.
Okay. What time?
It has to be in the afternoon.
How about 2 o'clock?
Done.
In the meantime, excuse me, but do you think that there's anything your organization could do about the food stamp increase March 1st?
What we've done already is we filed suit against the government trying to stop it. And the suit has not been decided yet, but we'll be keeping people in touch with what is happening with it. Because the food stamp increase, it concerns us very, very much.
Sure does.
Yeah. Now, another thing, the house meetings are a very, very important part of building up this organization. But this organization is also concerned with having people start getting involved right now. With things, starting with, okay, the organization that we do have set up already.
Excuse me, this, but if the food stamps go up, we won't be able to buy food stamps.
Well, this
and
soon
do you
is
think that your organization could
that?
Get us meals on wheels or at least one hot meal a day into Keene here?
Well, we could try to do that. The Meals on Wheels is it's a government program, and generally they fund you for only a certain amount of meals that you can have per day, so 25 meals, stuff like that. But we can look into that type of thing. You see, it shouldn't just be a project that the service center looks into. That would be a project that if we form this organization, that we all could look into it and see whether it's worth having it within this community. But see, you shouldn't expect the service center just to be doing, you know, all these things for you, because if we have an organization, that's the purpose of the organization, to make sure that we get things that we need.
Together.
Right. Because just me going in, well, they'll say, well, you know, what the hell does a farm worker want to do with getting Meals on Wheels? And we have, like, down in Delano, what we have is we've built a retirement center for farm workers, and it holds 58 retired farm workers. And this is an idea that we'd like people to think about, because it's built out on what we call the 40 acres, which is where the union hall is and stuff like this. But they have a garden, they're raising chickens, and living in a community type situation, which is that, see, a lot of us are lonely, you know, because we have maybe a few friends, but we don't have anybody we can talk to every day. So what we like to develop is a type of community spirit and atmosphere, so that the older people can get involved with the people within the union. And one of the best ways to do that is by going out on our picket lines. We have picket lines right now at Thrifty Mart on Saturday and Sunday's afternoons from 12 until 4.
Do you want us to go picketing?
We would like for you people to go picketing. Because you see that store, you know, Gallo, who I was talking about before, that store has more Gallo in it than any other place here in town. And they refuse to take it off the shelves. And we have we're asking people not to shop in this, not to buy the Gallo. But the farm workers, they drive by and they see the picket line out there, and they don't even come inside. So the only people shopping there now are the growers and the foremen, the foreman's wives, and some of the people from in town who, you know, feel that the growers are the people who help them. But we would like to have people come out on the picket lines with us and help us picket. The people from the Arvani Village are out there on Saturdays and Sundays. And it'll give you a chance
to
meet
sounds like fun.
A lot of the people who are in the
I have to have a ride.
Parents and kids.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll need a ride? Okay. Well, we can get a ride set up, because a lot of people don't have cars. And gas is too expensive for most people to be traveling around.
Where do you get your money from?
We have a small budget which is given to us every month, but generally we go in other people's cars if we have to go down to the welfare department or something like that. But then if we have to use our own car, we just take it out of the little bit of money we get every month.
Well, where does that money come from?
That money comes from the United Farm Workers. See, what we get is room and board and $5 a week for working in the union. And everybody in the union gets room and board and $5 a week, including Cesar Chavez, who's the president of the union. And with that money, you know, they provide us with housing, and we can buy enough food, we can give all the food stamps and stuff like this. But the union is in very, very bad shape right now. It doesn't have very much money at all. And we need the support of people here in the valley in order to get money. I myself, even though I'm only getting $5 a week, have pledged 50 cents out of that $5 a week back to the union.
Does that mean that the union is in bad shape economically?
Economically, we're in bad shape because we don't have hardly any contracts, and what money comes in from the contract is used to run those contracts. And out in the cities, see, we're heading into a depression, and out in the cities, people don't have as much money to give to the union as they were able to give before.
So you think the union will survive?
I know we're going to survive. The grave cells are down in the city. See, it's not just money that it takes to win our fight. What it takes is making sure that the growers don't sell their grapes. And you don't need money to make sure the growers don't sell their grapes. You just need bodies out in front of the stores and people telling one another, don't buy grapes, because the grapes have blood on them from the farm workers who died in the strike. So, you know, but we are, besides that, we are in bad shape financially. And one of the things I'd like to ask you all to do is to pledge a certain amount of money each week to help us keep on going. Because the work that we do, we don't get much money for it.
Gee, I'll pledge never to eat a grape.
I don't drink any gallon wine.
Well, we need, those are the type of, we need those type of pledges, but we also need money. Because without money, then, you know, if we're not able to get out. Well, you need money to help run off leaflets. You need money just for the small amount of money that we get every month and to run the offices and stuff like this. And the only way we're going to get that money is through the people who are helping. Who don't see it as like paying us off.
This is the end of the month, you know, and we don't get our checks until Saturday. Mm-hmm. Like the first.
Just well, what I'm asking is that you sign a pledge card.
Oh,
okay. I have some right here. That you can pledge so much money per month to the farm workers.
I want to help this
sure.
Can we let you know before you leave or when the meeting's
yeah.
over?
Sure. Okay. Okay, now I'll be back in touch with you. I'll give you a call for Friday on the house. Okay. And or I might drop by to find in the area. Okay.
So very interesting.
Do you think it's worth building
your own? I should do, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
My first question is, does she have part number one or part number two?
No, she took the whole thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She wanted to practice the, and I think it's a good idea.
Oh, good. That's why I didn't throw more questions on the service center, because I figured she was doing number one.
Yeah.
No, I was doing number two.
Unless we...
Oh, that's why I didn't...
structure breaks into it to find a good breaking point.
That's why I didn't put any questions on the service center, because I thought that would be number two.
Uh-huh.
And I kept thinking she's going over. I didn't
know. Well, where did you break?
I broke after I gave the history up to we're getting the contracts back.
Right.
And then I broke and asked, do you think there's any questions, you know, as to why I'm coming in and helping you guys? There was a lot of stuff that I wasn't able, that I think if I was doing a house meeting, I would have done more in part number one. But I hadn't. Other than just what I've seen today, I hadn't really thought too much about part number one, because
mm-hmm.
I was going to do part number two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of threw me off.
Well, no, I thought that was done well. Yeah. Well, but then you broke again. Didn't you have a second break in there? Or did you just have the one?
I think I had the one, but Anne came up with some questions that created break.
Sort of a natural break in there. Yeah. And when do you remember when that was? Was it when she started talking about the... your own problems? She asked about your own problems. And I think that created the break right there when you asked. Right. And that was after you had already talked about the service center.
Yeah.
So the second break would come after she gets through talking about the problem, the overall problems and the service center goodies. Wouldn't that be a fairly natural? And then she asked them. And ordinarily, I think they would be more, you know, just right on the edge of their chairs to ask questions at that point. Because you had, you'd refresh their minds about their own problems if they need any refreshment. did you mention that business about cutting back on Social Security.
But I didn't mention that. That's something that I would put right up front, like you had done. But I didn't mention that until I got into, after I asked her what her problems were.
And
we were starting to get off into a thing of, well, I got this problem, this problem, this problem, nothing specific.
Mm.
And so then I brought it back. I said, well, you know, one of the big problems we have right now, they're going to be cutting back on Social Security.
Oh, I guess I was in the kitchen.
They're going to be cutting back on the food.
Yeah. And I think that was, well, a little later, I think Ann asked about, or somebody asked about the case on food stamps. Did you ask about that? Yeah.
I need that information.
Yeah, and
I wasn't sure what we thought.
I think whenever any of that comes up, we ought to do what you did later anyway, which was to talk about not just the union doing it, which the union is doing it in this case, but what else the people themselves can do about it. Now, I don't know the situation there with the food stamps, but I do know that regardless of what the situation is, whether you can really do anything or not, it never hurts to raise hell. You know, and they can, that's one thing once they get organized. And you see, the reason for bringing these things up is that each time you do bring them up, after you've once mentioned the organization, you can refer back again to the organization and say, well, you see, once we get organized, we can take mass action on that. We can picket and we can demonstrate and we can raise all kinds and so forth, you know, to get the word back to our representatives what we think about all this. Whether it's on that or on the Social Security, the cutback on Social Security, whether we can actually influence that or not, I don't know, because you know, but it sure as hell isn't going to hurt to raise hell about it, and it's going to hurt. It's going to help the organization. It's going to help the older people to get. You know, it's like flexing their muscles, you know, or exercising, whatever it is.
There's a lot of stuff that can do that too.
Yeah.
You know, just raising hell type of things.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like Social Security has been. You know, just the people in the office are just screwing around, and it's nothing that, you know, unless they fire
them. You talking about the minimum
changes?
Dennis
Hill. You know who they got in there now?
That's
you
right.
You know that angle guy, Gary Wade, the one who's a racist. He's the biggest.
Where is he?
He's in Delano. He's
in what?
In the Social Security. He's the acting director now because they moved Dennis Hill to a better job
in
Bakersfield.
Right.
Well, now that
guy Gilbert Arbuckle is a racist. He's really, really good.
And the Social Security office controls
They have pretty good people working in the office.
Yeah.
They've always had good people except for this one guy. And now he's in charge of the office. And he's trying to be a real prick about things.
Well, then maybe that's the guy that needs to be thrown out of there.
There's your issue.
Yeah. But you see, each time, as I say, that these things come up, once you've paved the way by talking about the organization, it'll give you ammunition to show again the value of the organization, how the organization can tackle such an issue, the various ways. And I thought you handled that one question very good when they said, "Can the UFW do something about that?" And then you came back and said, well, sure, we are. We're already doing something. But this, again, it's your organization that's going to be doing something about it besides the action of the union independent of the organization. On that last question that they asked about, well, you know, you talked about the union when you were making the pitch for the money, or you got into that, and you said the union is in very bad shape financially. I think that's a... not exactly a no-no, but it's one of those things where you're just walking a tightrope on there. I think it's better. I don't think we ought to deny. I don't think we ought to say, oh, well, what the hell are you talking? We're rich, you know, or anything like that. But I think we ought to say that the union, as you know, has lost all of its contracts, so we just barely have enough. We just have enough money to take care of the ongoing operation. We can't take on anything extra. That's why we have to get help wherever we can. For anything extra that we do, so because she got worried right away. She was afraid the organization was going to fold up, which is a natural reaction.
It sounded like it was going down.
Yeah, and I don't think we want to give that impression, you know.
That's
but that
because people ask you that all the time about, I hear the union's really in bad shape.
Right.
You know, because of the contracts we lost and things like that. And right away you have to have an answer for them to build up their confidence again. Mm-hmm.
Right. That's right. Did you nail them down on the picketing? I forgot.
On the picketing, they said yes, if they need a ride, so I wrote down the ride.
Oh, you told them what day and time?
Yes.
Yeah. Any other comments? I mean, do any of you have any comments? I made them all. I thought she did a good job.
That was very good. I like that comment about, I even wrote it down. Probably lost it, but what it costs for commitment from you to help make sure that it works.
Yeah.
That's a real bad thing. Sometimes I listen to what I'm saying, and I found this out when I used to do house meetings on the boyfriend. You know, like, you really have to keep on top of what you're saying, or else, you know, you'll just go wandering off somewhere, you know. And on the boycott, I found when people don't know anything about the union, they'll just kind of let you wander off for a while, you know. Yeah. And you'll just be talking about something that's not really.
But I noticed one time you wandered off on the, I mean, you started on Gallup, and you gave an example on Gallup, and they were interested. And the more you wandered into it, the more they got interested. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talked about specific farm worker problems, like in the beginning, you made a general thing about Caesar, and then the farm workers had a bad time, and then the union came in, and then they got better. Well, nobody can relate to that.
Yeah.
And so then you went on and on for a while in the history.
And then I went back.
And then you went back, and when you went back, and you talked about Gallo, then they could really see that there were really problems that the union really helped with. And when people see that there's a real problem that the union helped some other poor person with, then they can begin to feel that maybe there's a problem that they have as poor people that the union can help them with.
Right.
Real specific.
And not only that, whenever you start to tell a story that either you yourself saw or you heard in a very colorful way from somebody else who was right on the scene, like Aggie was, you know. Boy, that brings them right out. That's like being at the, sitting in front of one of their favorite TV shows, you know. They're just right out there.
I can do that, sir.
So, that's one of the things that I didn't stress, that I always stress with the people out in the boycott, those of you that have been involved, and several of you here have been involved directly, all of you have, in strikes, situations, you've seen it with your own eyes. Whenever you can tell a story about some of that, do it. I mean, and make it relate to what you're talking about, because that makes your whole presentation really begin to live and breathe. We're going to have plenty of time to practice because, at least, see, Bill's starting in the other room with the folks in there, and unless Cress brings another machine, we're going to have to wait until they're through in there. Well, it won't be until tonight if we only have the one machine. If we get the two machines, we should be finished by dinner time.
What's a real good introduction to this?
Why don't you read off your outline?
Okay. I have a little problem trying to get it all down. So what I kind of started with was that instead of starting where we're starting on the outline now with Caesar and Caesar and everything, we're starting with an introduction of the situation today in terms of mentioning Social Security, mentioning food stamps, drawing a parallel to the Depression of the 1930s, which I think is going to grab a lot of
You're starting in with a calamity then, sort of an emergency situation,
exactly.
Like we used to start in
exactly.
At the beginning of that
just
thing.
Replacing it.
Right.
The Gallo emergency
right.
to the economic emergency.
Right.
So that we still have a part one.
Mm-hmm.
And then after laying out what the emergency is, which I think will really grab people, is going into what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what has been done, and then we can use the whole history of the CSO and the union, what has been done for farm workers, and the example, of what we've done.
Are you taking this down?
So like that would be part two. That would be the same part two essentially that we're using now.
So okay, it's a history.
Right. What we did and what we learned from that.
How it relates to the farm worker strike.
Right.
Nancy, I missed the first part of that.
Okay, like the first part would be an introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Things are bad. Things are rotten, miserable.
You mean there's the emergency?
Yeah. The depression.
Not the emergency.
Yeah. Number part one would be the emergency that we're all in. Okay. Part two would be what has been done. In other words, like Caesar grew out of a similar situation. He grew up in the Grapes of Grafton.